Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 1, Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair, a tale of Victorian horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 14, A Discreet Debut.
This is Chase Burnham, your eye on the street for Action 6 City News, reporting live from the Lilac Acres Wellness Center. Authorities have been on the scene since yesterday morning and are now confirming the discovery of dozens of neglected residents being forced to live in squalid and inhumane conditions. Operations at the so-called senior care facility have been completely shut down pending a full investigation. Lilac Acres sits adjacent to the Oddfellows Teen Adjustment Center, a youth facility operating in similar substandard conditions without city permits. The entire complex has been a notorious blight on the neighborhood for decades and had recently come under the scrutiny of authorities once again. Nearly a month ago, Oddfellows was visited by police investigators looking to question its director, Silas Philgrave, in regards to the disappearance of 10-year-old Hector Hernandez. Witnesses had reported last seeing Hector leaving the center in Philgrave's company. You may remember that a similar scandal was raised around the Tina Bleiberman case in the 80s, where Oddfellows was investigated due to questionable business practices that resulted in several missing teenagers. Sadly, that particular case hinged on the eyewitness testimony of then-16-year-old Sloane Strand, whose failure to appear in court had caused the case to be dismissed. Well, today, it's looking like justice is finally being served here in the Outer Richmond. Although Director Silas Philgrave has evaded police custody and is currently at large in the Greater Bay Area. An all-points bulletin has been issued for Philgrave, and authorities are launching a statewide search. If you see this man, he should be considered armed and dangerous. You should contact 911 immediately. This is Chase Burnham for Action 6 City News.
Yeah, I think that's enough of that.
Audra Lamolle scowled and grabbed the TV remote. She switched off the glowing image of Philgrave's mugshot and staggered to her feet. Yuki stood at a discreet distance and had been watching from the kitchen. She was doing her best to keep her blank face on after hearing the news report. She distinctly remembered the day when Philgrave had shown up at the Belfair with a sleepy-looking boy. Lamolle grumbled while she kicked aside some empty bottles, then her eyes fell upon Yuki and darted back to the TV.
Oh, I didn't see you there. Allez, mon petit, mamselle thinks we need a little tête-à-tête.
Yuki remained still while Lamolle closed in and turned up the voltage in her yellow eyes.
You don't remember anything about the news report, n'est-ce pas? And you need to stay out of the way this evening. The soiree is about to start, and Desmond does not need any distractions from you. Get to your room and stay there. That's a good girl.
Yes, mamselle.
Lamolle seemed satisfied with the flatness of Yuki's response. She turned on her towering heels and departed for her ballroom to change into a suitably flashy outfit for the impending media event. Yuki listened. When she heard the front door to the flat slam shut, her expression instantly brightened and she moved across the room towards the windows. She looked down at the building across the street and fished her phone out of her jeans pocket. She flicked it open and dialed. Crowley answered immediately, waving at her from one of the windows above the cafe.
Hey, so what happened? Are you okay?
Yep, it worked perfectly.
Yuki straightened the choker she wore around her neck, a short black silk cord from which dangled a glass bead like a bright blue eye.
Cool. Told you that old hag would be no match for a Nazar pendant. Hey, did you see the news? The cops are looking for Philgrave. Are you sure your guys are gonna be okay? I'm sorry, I can't be any more help. Mom is already freaking out about all the trucks and vans blocking the street over there, so she has me on hardcore lockdown.
There was a sudden whoosh of cold air as Tina appeared with a wide grin and a shower of purple sparks. Yuki saw the amethyst crystal hanging once again from Tina's neck and smiled.
Don't worry about it. You've done plenty. We'll be fine. Tina promises not to bust any skulls until later on when everybody's at the party. I'll call you as soon as anything happens.
Okay. I'll talk to you later. Be careful.
Yuki closed her phone and Tina winked with a little nod. She gave her knuckles a menacing crack while she sparked up and vanished. Derventure was standing at the head of the marble staircase, counting his steps to reach the podium where he would be making his speech at the height of the festivities. Since the Bleiberman incident, Derventure had had the Belfair completely redone. The old reception desk and 80 seating had been cleared away. Now a new chandelier gleamed from overhead, reflecting in the glossy marble floor that had been cleaned and polished. A shadow of the former glory that had been Coil House. For a moment, Derventure felt like he was back in 1885. He looked down at the event planner scurrying about with a satisfied expression. Things were moving smoothly. Every detail had been seen to as the hour of the party approached. Although Derventure was somewhat dubious about the theme the army of design consultants had insisted upon. Apparently, Roman was very hot at the moment, and the stage had been set accordingly. Looking something like Nero's palace, complete with porticos draped with diaphanous fabric and flaming bronze braziers. Derventer raised an eyebrow at the scanty togas the waitstaff had been forced to wear. It did warm his black little heart, however, when he heard the "Whoa!" and "Cool!" as the staff began to arrange shimmering bottles of ice-cold Aqua Deluxe into various urns strategically stationed around the floor. Derventer turned and walked into the conservatory, or what was to be the VIP section for the party, a private screened-off area that had been set up for those celebrities who were interested in something a little stronger than a sports drink and weren't afraid of needles. Of course, these particular services didn't come cheap. They involved the silent exchange of little slips of paper, scrawled with a number, followed by several zeros.
Whatever the market will bear.
Derventer chuckled and nodded his approval. Everything seemed to be running smoothly. There was just enough time to slip away upstairs and dress for the evening. Derventer halted suddenly at the sight of Mr. Skittery. The head event planner was screeching into his headset while rushing across the floor in his direction.
Everything's running on schedule, Mr. D. Except for the gate at the street entrance. The valets are having some difficulty with the, mechanism.
Irritated, Derventer rolled his eyes.
I don't know, Skittery. Leave the blasted thing open, then. Just make sure that the valets get with the program, yes?
Derventer's face darkened.
I realize that you're an old society member, Skittery. But old Lang Syne aside, you don't want to disappoint me now, do you? It looks like you've got a good thing going here. But mess this up, and you'll find yourselves upstairs in an urn next to old Judge Greaves. Ugh, I don't have time for this. I need to go change my clothes.
Yes, I'll take care of everything.
Skittery was left gaping while Derventer turned and opened the hidden panel underneath the grand staircase. He stepped through without another word and headed towards the brass elevator in the distance. Yuki was peeking around one of these shimmery curtains that had been hung to hide the entrance to the mirrored corridor. She had just seen Derventer disappear through the hidden panel at the foot of the stairs. The cater waiters were scrambling around everywhere, and Yuki shrank back and hid behind the stacks of Aqua Deluxe boxes that crowded the corridor. One of the open boxes caught her eye. It was the streamlined, ultra-modern design of the shimmering bottles. It nudged at her memory. It reminded her of Tokyo. Then her eyes popped when she saw the familiar logo on the packing labels. Kogiyama Corporation. It boggled Yuki's mind. The doctor's company? What were they doing working with Derventer? And did that mean that the doctor also knew what was going on? Yuki almost wished she was back under Lamal's spell rather than deal with the notion of the doctor actually being in cahoots with Derventer. Yuki looked over at the last mirrored panel in the corridor, the one that disguised the entrance to the teapool chamber. She remembered the night that Mrs. Flack was arrested and the police had brought her back, how the remaining Ouroboros Society members seemed to be waiting for her return, and then what she'd overheard from one of the strange old ladies, how her being close at hand would keep the baby happy. Yuki wondered what else Derventer had been up to during her three-week vacation with Mademoiselle Lamal. She pressed open the secret mirrored door and headed down the stairs towards the teapool. When Yuki reached the bottom of the stairs, she let out a gasp of shock.
Oh no! What has he done to you?
Derventer had made some changes, that was for sure. the last time Yuki had been down here, the baby had been contentedly swimming in its tea pool. Then Derwinter had brought a large metal grate crashing down, which had locked the baby in. Now the grate had been removed, and the baby was floating sluggishly with several withered tentacles that had spilled over the sides of the tea pool and lay splayed across the floor. Yuki recoiled at the sight of the baby's marred surface, the large depressions where the skin had been carved away. Derwinter had finally got what he had wanted all along, and the poor creature was unable to put up a fight. It looked like Derwinter was keeping it drugged. A network of tubing ran from an IV drip to the baby, anchored with a long barbed needle like an evil twisted harpoon. More boxes of Aqua Deluxe crowded the chamber. Beyond them, Yuki observed that the broken tile in the corner had been patched up. There was still a little pile of rubble, though, on top of which Yuki saw the flash of yellow plastic again. Daisy von Bruin's visor was still down there. A watery shifting sound brought Yuki's attention back to the baby. She thought she heard a faint cry, the merest trace of a purr. She walked to the pool's edge.
Aw, you poor thing. Don't worry, it'll be okay. Now hold still.
She grabbed the IV tubes and pulled as hard as she could. There was an unpleasant wet tearing sound as the barbed needle came free and clattered to the floor. Yuki heard the baby whimper in appreciation as it sank beneath the pool's surface. The tentacles retracted, except for one that had spilled over and hadn't quite found its way back inside. Yuki reached down to help. As soon as her fingertips made contact with the baby's skin, Yuki was hit with a sudden wave of queasiness and her vision blurred. When things became clear again, Yuki looked down at the tea pool and gasped. It was as if her previous dream of Amako had picked up exactly where it had left off. As before, Yuki was glued to the spot while Amako was dragged beneath the surface of the tea pool. A low, evil hiss emanated from the baby as it held her in its coils. Amako struggled, and each time she managed to break the surface, she seemed a little different, like time was rewinding for her. She sank again and resurfaced a young woman, then a young girl, until at last there was a small infant crying from within the coiling tentacles. Yuki stood transfixed until the sound of footsteps diverted her attention. Lady Iwanaga had arrived at the foot of the stairs. She looked furious, brandishing a fierce expression as well as a long, gleaming katana.
Release her!
Iwanaga's words echoed across the chamber. The baby reacted instantly and began to purr. The tentacles obediently relinquished the screaming infant into Iwanaga's sword-free arm. Yuki turned to see that Derwinter had also arrived at the foot of the stairs, his face frozen with an expression of sheer horror as he slowly approached the tea pool.
No, no, no! Amako, what has she done?
It is not what she has done. It is what you have done.
Iwanaga placed the infant in Derwinter's arms, then turned and raised her sword.
I'm so sorry, my dearest.
The baby was purring and managed a peep of surprise before Iwanaga brought the katana down. She let out a cry of fury and began a relentless attack. The katana flashed with several slashes until the baby was in pieces, writhing on the surface of the tea pool. With tears in her eyes, Iwanaga staggered back to the wall of the chamber. She felt along until her fingers grasped at a large switch handle. She brought it down with a click, and there was a deep metallic clunk from the bottom of the tea pool. Suddenly, the pool's surface began to swirl and bubble as the sacred tea, as well as the dark and quivering remnants of the baby, drained away. Iwanaga let out a cry of anguish and reeled towards the center of the chamber. She moved the sword in a long arc over her head and began to mumble strange words like a spell. A shimmery pulse shot out and ran up the walls as if attaching itself to the boundaries of the house. Like Iwanaga's words had woven the bars of a cage to keep things out, as well as in. Iwanaga turned back to Derwinter, who was now sitting at the bottom of the stairs with the infant Amako resting quietly in his arms.
It's finished, Desmond. While I live, the baby is banished and cannot return. The time of the sacred tea is over. It has brought us nothing but sadness and disaster. I believe that your flask is currently full. Be wise with its contents, because that is all the time you have left. And as for Amako, I am sending her far away so that this time she will grow up away from us and our ways.
Derventor looked genuinely shocked as Iwanaga reached over and took Amako. The baby promptly started crying as soon as she left his arms. Iwanaga began to climb the stairs and left Derventor sitting there alone. The image blurred and faded as Yuki found herself kneeling by the tea pool once again. The baby surfaced and sloshed over. Something new occurred to Yuki. The fact that now she was picking up a strange vibe coming off the baby, like she was tuning into its strange frequency. Something like a flicker of emotion. Something that felt like sadness.
So that's what happened to you. I'm sorry, that's terrible.
The baby emitted a low hiss and stirred, causing little waves to lap over the sides of the tea pool. Yuki sensed the baby's anger and frustration. Then she glanced over at the gleaming stacks of Aqua Deluxe bottles.
Derventor's got you packaged and ready to sell. It's my fault you're here, isn't it? You came back because you mistook me for my grandmother.
The baby emitted a tiny purr and swam a little closer.
Well, if it helps, I don't think you should let Derventor do this to you.
The baby's purr almost sounded inquisitive, and Yuki raised an eyebrow.
Yeah. Is there anything you can do to stop Derventor?
The baby remained still as if digesting this last question. With a low hiss, it suddenly turned black and began to radiate a low tremor that expanded out across the chamber. The cases of Aqua Deluxe that were stacked next to the pool began to vibrate. The iridescent shimmer in the bottles was suddenly quenched, and they became dark and cloudy. Overhead, the bottles of Aqua Deluxe that were currently chilling on ice, as well as the syringes which were waiting discreetly in the VIP area, all followed suit and trembled for a moment. Their opalescent shimmer replaced with that same curious murkiness. This transmutation went unseen by Skittery and the other planners, who were all running around frantically while the party guests began to arrive. As night fell, the steady arrival of limousines at the Curse Castle was causing something of a stir in the neighborhood. A small collection of faces peered out of the cafe window, including Sloane Golden and Rosie Von Bruin, who both wore distinct looks of disapproval. High above, Crowley watched out of his bedroom window with his fingers crossed. He took some comfort in the fact that at least he'd been able to help get Tina back, and based on their brief exchange earlier, Crowley had gotten the clear impression that Yuki would be just fine now that Tina was around. Inside the Curse Castle's ballroom, Audra Lamalle was just putting on her finishing touches. The thump-thump of the music that was traveling up through the floor told her that it was time to make her appearance. She stopped for one final check in her vanity mirror. There really wasn't much to improve upon. Her maintenance time had been drastically reduced since Derventor's last treatment. And indeed, as Desmond had predicted, Audra had gotten to like the whole freshly scrubbed thing. Certainly a foreign concept considering the smorgasbord of camouflage she had needed before. Things were definitely looking up. And once the cash started rolling in, the first order of business would be to see to getting an age-appropriate wardrobe. Audra looked askance at her retired racks of sequined evening gowns like they were old skins from another lifetime. Certainly far too matronly for her now. Then she scowled at the few scanty, naughty costumes which were still hanging on the end of the rack. As far as Audra was concerned, her days of working the sexy cop and go-go nurse shtick were over. The eyes of the gathering crowd fell upon Audra Lamalle as she made her grand entrance from the ballroom. In turn, Audra's golden eyes scanned over the rather sizable turnout.
Yes, things are definitely looking promising.
She gracefully descended the stairs, where she joined Derventor at his side. He was enticing Kogi Armor Corporation executives by making sure they saw the celebrities which had already arrived.
Ah, here she is. Gentlemen, may I introduce the delightful Audra Lamalle. She's proved to be an invaluable part of our little team.
Audra's pleasant smile faltered when she saw the executives goggling her up and down. They each bowed, their faces wearing eager and rather unsavory grins. Audra, however, with the elusiveness of a seasoned professional, smiled promptly and removed herself from the proceedings with a half-mumbled excuse and disappeared into the crowd. Working the room was something that Audra was ordinarily good at, even without the aid of her unusual powers of persuasion. Small talk just came naturally, but somehow she was having difficulty relating to this particular crowd, an entirely different demographic than she was used to. Everyone seemed to be connected somehow to little electronic devices. They stood around in little groups, but nobody was really speaking to one another directly. They were either talking on their phones or texting or tweeting, or just standing around holding up their phone like a little social shield. Poor Audra. She felt horribly out of touch. Truly ancient in this trendy crowd of children, what she needed was a stiff drink and a cigarette. But then she observed that no one at the party was smoking or even drinking alcohol. Everyone around her was contentedly sipping from their stylish bottles of Aqua Deluxe. And it seemed that as soon as Audra noticed this, she found herself suddenly holding her own bottle that had been dropped in her empty hand by a passing waiter clad in his scanty toga. Well, at least that was something. Desmond's new product seemed to be a success, which was good news for her as well. And that warmed Audra's heart more than any idle chit-chat. Audra sipped her Aqua Deluxe and drifted through the dancing and chattering crowd that was heady with her favorite scent. The smell of filthy lucre. She set her sights on the sliding glass doors where she would withdraw for a private, celebratory cigarette. When Audra had reached the parking area, she paused to light up. The limited space in the underground garage meant that the valets were parking cars out on the street now. Audra's motorcycle was in its usual spot, and it was here that she perched herself, coyly smoking her cigarette, while the handsome young valets ran back and forth dealing with the cars. If Audra's attention had not been so diverted, she might have noticed the figure that was sneaking up behind her. Before Audra knew what hit her, she was struck over the head with the butt end of a pistol and dragged away unnoticed into the shadows. The figure removed his valet jacket, revealing a tuxedo underneath. Philgrave looked down with a satisfied sneer.
My, Audra. Don't we look lovely this evening?
Meanwhile, Yuki was back behind her curtain and the party was in full swing. She was fascinated by the A-list crowd. The celebrities, each with their little clusters of protective entourage milling about. And then she spotted Derwinter, clearly in his element. While the music thumped, he danced from starlet to starlet, all the while radiating his smooth and well-practiced charm that dissolved all defenses. As Yuki scanned the crowd, she spied two teenage girls in black vintage dresses, flitting around and giggling hysterically. The girls darted up the stairs to the conservatory and disappeared into the VIP tent. They each wore an enormous corsage made of deep red roses. The dark red petals tugged at Yuki's memory, the same roses that the widow's Carstairs and Bilzy always wore. Tina materialized behind Yuki, plugging her ears with her fingers while looking more than a little pissed off.
Disco puke. Isn't it ass-kicking time yet? I'm kind of getting bored here.
Yuki glanced over her shoulder.
Huh? Oh, I'm just trying to see if everybody's here.
What do you mean, everybody? The fact that anybody's here is a good enough excuse to get wailed on as far as I'm concerned.
Tina shimmered over and stuck her head through the curtain.
Ugh, look at them all. Just begging for a big fat slap.
Tina, shh.
The music suddenly went quiet, and Derwinter had moved to the top of the marble stairs where he stood framed in the conservatory archway. The assembly burst into rapid applause as Derwinter walked to the podium and flashed his bottle of Aqua Deluxe with a toothy grin. Yuki was still scanning the room when she suddenly gasped with surprise.
Tina, look! I think that's Philgrave. What's he doing here?
What? Philgrave? No way. Where is he?
Philgrave had disappeared in the crowd and Yuki struggled to spot him. It was at this point that Tina had finally had enough. With a snarl, she suddenly vanished in a shower of purple sparks.
No! Tina, wait!
Meanwhile, the applause continued, and Derwinter did his best to appear modest and brush the adulation aside.
Well, that's marvelous. Thank you. Thank you all very, very much. My partners at Kogiyama Corporation and I would like to extend a very special welcome to you all,
as well as offer many thanks for making Aqua Deluxe's launch such a smashing success. And before the night's festivities continue, I'd like us all to raise a toast. Here's to the fine people at Kogiyama Corporation, and of course, to Aqua Deluxe!
Derventor raised his bottle and drank while the crowd burst into resounding applause. Then something unexpected happened. There was a disturbance from the center of the crowd that parted to reveal a young, wild-eyed man in an old tuxedo waving a pistol.
That's right. You all keep your distance, unless you all want to get a face full of lead. That'd look real pretty now, wouldn't it?
Philgrave turned and aimed his gun at Derventor.
Well now, look at you. Aren't we just two? You think you can just string me along for 25 years and then just drop me? Just like that?
Across the room, Derventor maintained his composure while speaking into the mic.
Please don't panic, everyone. This man is wanted by the authorities, who have been alerted and are presently on their way. You'd better run along, Silas, before they get here.
Oh, really? Is that right? You call the cops on me, Desmond? You think I'm playing here?
Philgrave leveled his gun and fired a warning shot, which winged by dangerously close. Yet Derventor didn't flinch. He merely stood there looking down at Philgrave with his icy stare.
I'm afraid you're only playing your usual part, Silas. The fool.
Philgrave sneered. But before he could fire another shot, suddenly someone was screaming from the VIP tent. A girl came bursting out, wailing in pain with her hands over her face. Derventor stepped out of the way just in time to avoid a collision. She fell to her knees while her skin became mottled and sagged like it was made of soft wax. She parted her withering hands to reveal wide, watery blue eyes, crazed as they darted about and became clouded with cataracts. She turned and clutched at Derventor, while her corsage fell to pieces and the rose petals fell like drops of blood. With a shock, Derventor recognized what was left of Mrs. Carstairs. Her skeletal hands began to claw at his jacket lapels while her screams seemed to ossify. Derventor looked down in horror as she became mummified before his very eyes. With a final dry rasp, she fell lifeless to the floor, falling apart like she was made of parchment and ash. There was an odd moment of silence before general pandemonium erupted throughout the hall. Skittery and his staff began to scream and run in every direction. The ensuing panic spread throughout the room. People began to scramble for the exit, causing several flaming braziers to topple over, igniting the meticulously arranged decor. The decorative plastic columns and swagged fabric went up in flames immediately, causing even more people to scatter in a jangle of shouts and screams. The inferno began to spread hungrily, intensifying until the entire Belfair was ablaze. Even though his thunder had been stolen, Philgrave still had his eyes on Derventor. He closed in on the marble stairs against the retreating tide of screaming party guests. Amid the chaos, Derventor suddenly felt an odd twinge that went clear to his bones. He looked down at his own hands and shuddered. There were the unmistakable signs of liver spots appearing. He felt his face and drew back suddenly at the touch of the loosening skin. He looked down at the Aqua Deluxe bottle, which was still in his hand, and for the first time, he noticed the absence of its trademark shimmer. The formula was tainted.
Looks like you're finally getting what's coming to you.
Philgrave remained unaltered, standing alone at the bottom of the stairs. He glared at Derventor down the barrel of his pistol.
Let me guess. Another formula not quite up to par?
Derventor failed to respond, having doubled over in pain while clutching at his middle. Philgrave began to cackle with glee at the sight of Derventor staggering down the stairs. Derventor reached out a steadying hand, and Philgrave shrank back, causing Derventor to lurch forward and drop to the floor. Philgrave's face glowed with malice as a wall of flame shot up behind him. He observed Derventor gasping in pain while straining to climb to his feet.
Why, what's the matter, Desmond? Got a little tummy ache? Now you know how it feels. And it looks like it's a good thing I didn't sample any of your latest bugaboo. We'll see who gets to be the young one now.
Philgrave's vengeance, sadly for him, was short-lived. A sudden burst of purple sparks catapulted the two apart, sending Philgrave flying out of sight through the wall of flames, and Derventor skidding towards the sliding glass doors and the parking garage. Tina suddenly materialized, grinning from ear to ear.
Well, all right.
So, who's ready for a world-class ass-kicking?
Deventer sputtered and fell back, surprisingly into the arms of Audra Lamal, who had just stumbled in through the sliding glass doors. They grabbed onto each other while trying to stand, and then recoiled in mutual horror. Like Deventer, Audra was having a similar reaction, as if the inferno around them was melting away their guise of youth, and time had gotten its hooks in deep, and it started to catch up with them. The trail of purple sparks shot through the flames, and Tina suddenly appeared.
Ah! My two favorite people!
There was another flash of purple light. Audra took the brunt of the impact and was tossed across the floor, while Derwinter ran and cowered out of sight behind the stump of a smoldering column. Coughing from the smoke, he struggled to catch his breath, then managed to raise a trembling eyebrow at the sight of Yuki hiding by the entrance to the mirrored corridor. Tina had closed in on the crumpled figure of Audra, who was convulsing on the floor under the burden of her advancing years. Tina exhibited a look that was disturbed, yet oddly compelled while she watched Audra writhing in agony.
Nice! That's a good look for you. You stay right there now. I'll be right back.
Philgrave was trapped in a corner, barricaded by the wall of flames. His cries were suddenly silenced by a shower of purple sparks.
You!
Hey, dirtbag! Long time no see!
Wait! You're dead! Desmond said so.
Yeah. Obviously, Deventer really knows what he's doing. You guys have tried to kill me a couple of times now. You a-holes can't get anything right, can you?
Philgrave stumbled back, struggling to push himself deeper into the corner, but there was nowhere to escape. Tina scoffed and walked her big boots through the fire. Her wake of purple sparks seemed to feed the flames that blazed high around her.
You can't get away from me, dirtbag. Not now.
Tina threw out her arms in classic spooky ghost style and laughed. Philgrave's eyes were like mirrors shining in the dancing flames. He waved his pistol and began shooting wildly at Tina until the click, click, click of the revolver finally told him that he was out of ammo. In a flash, Tina shimmered and reappeared so that she was kneeling next to Philgrave, close enough to whisper in his ear.
This is the end of the road, dirtbag.
There was a sudden, ominous cracking sound from overhead as the scorched ceiling plaster gave way and began to fall. Tina vanished in a shower of purple sparks as Philgrave was buried underneath a barrage of fiery rubble. Center of the inferno, looking down like she was waiting to see if Philgrave was going to pull a Bleeberman and try to muscle in on her haunting action. But there was nothing, only the persistent crackle of the fire. Philgrave was gone, once and for all. And while the Belfair continued to burn, Tina looked around with a frown upon seeing that Lamal had disappeared, and that Yuki and Deventer were also nowhere to be seen. Tina grumbled and reached out with her scanner. Instantly, her frown changed to a devious grin, and she vanished in a burst of purple sparks.
What are you doing? Let go of me, you monster!
Deventer held Yuki tightly by the shirt collar as he led her through the mirrored panel and down the stairs to the tea pool. Each time his knuckles grazed her skin, Yuki thought she could feel the now familiar twinge of an approaching vision.
Monster? Oh, really? Is that any way to talk to your grandfather?
My what? You?
It was as if the missing puzzle piece had been in front of Yuki all along, like the house had been trying to show her the way to the truth. And now, as they awkwardly descended the stairs, Deventer's breath was coming in wheezing gasps. His once tall frame was now bent and stooped under the advancing strain of the years that he had cheated. Yuki managed a quick glimpse and was shocked at his transformation. Deventer's handsome features were sunken and withered, his skin suspended like wrinkled parchment. Only his gray eyes glinted bright and fierce out of the time-worn visage. When they reached the floor of the chamber, the baby hissed and reared up from inside the tea pool, while its skin instantly darkened and its many tentacles flailed just out of reach. Deventer shuffled closer and swung Yuki around in front of him like a shield, and as before, the baby calmed down at once and its complexion changed to pink again, Derventor pushed Yuki closer while he discreetly removed a silver knife from his pocket. Yuki felt the cold shock of metal being pressed into her hand while Derventor whispered in her ear.
You've got to cut away the skin. The skin. Hurry!
No! No! Let go of me!
Yuki struggled, causing Deventer's grip to shift. As his hand brushed hers, the vision that had been hovering just out of reach suddenly descended upon Yuki. Her posture slackened, and she fell back against Derventor, who struggled to hold her up in his weakened condition. A heartbeat later, Yuki stood upright and spun around to face Derventor.
You killed him.
A confused look ran over Derventor's face, and the split second he spent pondering this statement was enough time for the baby's tentacles to dart out and rip Derventor away from Yuki. He cried out as he fell to the floor. The baby darkened once again and hissed with pleasure at Derventor's labored gurgles while it engulfed him and pulled him under the surface of the tea pool. Yuki watched as the tea pool's surface gradually became calm and placid. Then she looked up in time to notice that the roof was collapsing. Falling chunks of fiery debris began to rain down from above, landing on the stairwell and blocking Yuki's escape. A corner of the ceiling suddenly collapsed in a shower of masonry. Yuki leapt out of the way while shielding her head. High above, through the dust and smoke, Yuki could make out the great hall that was glowing in choking flames. While another hefty portion of ceiling threatened to fall, Yuki realized that her exit options were looking somewhat limited. It was then, with relief, that Yuki saw the flash of purple sparks as Tina appeared.
Wow. Okay, looks like we're done here. So, ready to go or what? Hello? Where are you going?
Yuki had suddenly darted off across the chamber. She jumped over the bits of smoldering rubble and picked up something off of the floor. She ran back to Tina, holding a yellow plastic visor.
Okay, let's get out of here.
Tina rolled her eyes.
No duh. What do you think I've been saying?
Tina locked her arms around Yuki's middle, and in a shower of purple sparks, they shot up and out of the chamber as the last of the ceiling began to crumble down. They flew up into the great hall, the fiery remnants of the Belfair. Tina set Yuki down on the floor by the sliding glass doors, the only area which hadn't yet been burnt to a crisp. They looked at each other like they had both had the same thought at the same time. Tina still couldn't leave the boundary of the house. It was then that they both saw figures over each other's shoulders. Standing at the head of the marble staircase, framed under the flaming conservatory archway, Yuki saw a vision in white. A petite woman with floor-length white hair dressed in a white kimono. Tina shimmered out of the way while the glass doors suddenly slid open and an army of firefighters bolted in, led, oddly enough, by Yuki's mother, the doctor.
Yuki! Yuki, come on! We gotta get out of here! The whole place is coming down!
It was as if time suddenly slowed. The doctor rushed forward and wrapped her arms around Yuki, but Yuki didn't respond. She remained fixed in place, staring across the burning hall. The doctor's eyes followed the direction of Yuki's stare and suddenly went wide with astonishment.
Iwanaga?
The doctor stared, slack-jawed and amazed, while the firefighters grabbed Yuki and had to forcibly remove the doctor, who was still gaping over her shoulder. Lady Iwanaga bowed to Ame and Yuki as they disappeared through the sliding glass doors. In a flash of blinding light that caused the surrounding fire to suddenly pale, the form of Lady Iwanaga burned far brighter and vanished with such a force as to shatter every pane of glass in the conservatory. There was a sudden whoosh of cold air that was sucked in from the outside. It blew through Tina, sending a shock clear to the tips of her bright blue hair. She drifted across the inferno, unsure if what her scanner was showing her was true. Suddenly, she could sense outside. The barrier had been lifted. With a shower of purple sparks and a loud yell that seemed to fan the flames all the higher, Tina Bleiberman flew out into the San Francisco night sky, while the flames continued to feast until the cursed castle was utterly consumed. And so, Chapter 14 comes to a close. I'd like to thank guest voices on this episode, Sally Clausen as the Doctor, Lisa Snare as Tina, Tawny Tackett as Lady Iwanaga, and Leanne Parker as Yuki. Music on the program provided by freesound.org and incomptech.com. For more info, please check out the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. Please stay tuned for Chapter 15 and the conclusion to our story. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.